First case for argument this morning is 22-1098, UltraVision versus GoVision. Mr. Fabricant, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. We're here after a full trial on the merits in the Eastern District of Texas. And, you know, the primary focus of the appeal with respect to the Hall patents, the 782 patent and the 294 patent, deals with the claim construction by the district court after the Markman hearing, before trial, that the terms waterproof and sealed to be waterproof should be limited to the ingress of water covered by IP65 or higher. So that was the claim construction. Importantly, neither party requested that the IP ratings be any part of the claim construction. Abson, in fact, proposed a very broad construction preventing water from entering the panel.
What do you think the significance is of the fact that the trial court adopted a construction different from either of the proposed ones? That's certainly a permissible thing for the trial court as it would be for us. So why is it significant that it was different?
I think it's significant. I agree with Your Honor that the trial court, just like this one, can adopt whatever construction it believes is reasonable and proper. But I think it's significant because it shows that the defendant, Abson, in considering claim construction, as all parties do in the claim construction procedure, didn't believe itself that an IP65 or any IP rating should be involved with the construction of waterproof or sealed to be waterproof. So I think it's important because this is a company which is in the business. That's their business. They sell very large amounts of these panels and they understand what waterproofing is. And that business didn't believe it was something which should be included. Now I understand, obviously, the district court, starting with the magistrate Judge Payne and then as confirmed over our objections by Judge Gilstrap, believed that the examples of IP ratings throughout the specification rose to the level of allowing the court to import those examples, those embodiments into the claim itself. And respectfully, I believe the court erred for the following reason. There are many IP ratings, as this court has seen from the brief, 65, 66, 67, 68. We'll talk about 69 in a second. But those are pursuant to our own expert who did put in a declaration on claim construction, and Abson's did not. Those are examples of the level of protection which one might seek in this type of industry. They're not the protection itself. The protection itself is to prevent water from entering the panel. And I think very, very important and telling on this point, evidentiary-wise, is when we went to trial, and the entire defense for the entire trial, obviously, was we are not IP65. And clearly all of their demonstratives, all of the evidence, repeatedly, we are not IP65, and therefore we don't infringe. There's no question that was the heart of the case. But very importantly is...
That was the heart of the case after the claim construction.
After the claim construction.
That would be kind of astonishing if it weren't.
No. But the point is this. Equally true, they claimed they were IP54. Which is a lesser standard. And yet, all of the evidence that was presented through their corporate witnesses and through others at trial showed that their panels were waterproof. If you put aside the IP ratings, they're selling tens of millions of dollars of panels to outdoor stadiums, like the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. They're out in the elements, they're out in the weather, and the testimony at trial from their own corporate witnesses, including the president of the company, was that they didn't have water problems, they didn't leak, they didn't fail. So we know from their own evidence that a panel with less than IP65 can be waterproof.
Well, you're mixing up fairly two different issues. One is whether the IP rating should be included at all in the claim construction or whether they matter at all. And the other is, if they do, what should the ratings be? So there are kind of two parts to this question, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I mean, just one of the things, I mean, the most important thing that I thought about the district court's construction was his reliance on the intrinsic record. and it seems like he had quite a bit to go on. Is there anything in the intrinsic record, in your view, that points in the other direction, other than your argument, well, you need lexicography, and this doesn't rise to lexicography?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. In the specification, there are examples which speak to environmental protection, including preventing solid particles, as well as water, from intruding into the panel. And the reason that's important is claim one of the 782 patent is a waterproof. They're trying to keep water out of the panel. It's not a claim directed at keeping particles, solid particles, out of the panel. And that's very important because these panels are also out in the desert environments, dust bowl environments. So keeping solid particles out is very important. I think that's where the judge didn't give enough attention to the fact that the portions of the spec dealing with environmental conditions, which prevent solid particles and water, and now in the context of that teaching and disclosure in the specification, now look at claim one. Now you see.
Wait a minute, but are you saying, therefore, that the IP ratings were inapt because they include not just waterproofing and solid particles? And how can you say that when the dependent claims specifically reference IP ratings? And obviously they have to be narrower and be included within the independent claim.
Your Honor, what I'm saying is the dependent claim 6, which specifically identified the IP ratings, that was speaking to protect a panel from particles as well as water. Claim 1 only talks about water, waterproofing. And
well,
so,
how about, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
sure,
your time is short,
sure.
So I don't want to, but I mean, one of the things that Judge Gilstrap, in addition to, as I said, predominantly the intrinsic record, he did take UltraVision's expert statement that a person skilled in the art would use the IP ratings to describe how waterproof something is.
Your Honor, what our expert said in his declaration and testimony was that it was would be understood by a person of ordinary skill in the art to understand a level of protection. But his testimony and his opinion was that it's not a person of ordinary skill in the art would not look to an IP rating to determine the waterproofing itself, but rather a level of protection. And we have in our briefs, and we've cited to the portions of Mr. Cradell's declaration at Appendix 3228, 3229, 3230, 3231, portions where he expressly and clearly sets forth his opinion that based upon his experience, a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand that waterproof in the context of modular outdoor usage, the LED panels to mean a level of protection against water ingression so that the product will survive in the environment to which it is installed. And he has many different opinions, but they're all basically saying that a person of ordinary skill would understand that it's to protect the ingress of water and that the IP ratings would not be used by a person of ordinary skill in the art, would not be necessary to determine waterproofing. And he also offers that with respect to his opinion that he doesn't believe the claims are indefinite for that reason.
Can I just ask you this? I think I read that the first digit is about not water, and the second digit is about water,
yes.
Right? So would this be any different if the district court, instead of saying 65 or higher, had said an IP rating in which the second digit is 5 or higher?
Well, it would have clarified that he's directing it solely to water, as opposed to solid particles.
And the water was what was in dispute at the trial. It was all about whether the water rating of their product was higher than, was 5 or higher or lower, right? Was there any litigation about the first digit?
No, that is true because of the construction which we obtained from the court. Both sides had to direct their attention to the construction, and there was no way to prove infringement in light of the construction without proving there was an IP65 greater or greater. It was that's what we were forced to do in light of the construction. Had we not had that construction, if the judge had ordered a construction that was based on, as we believe would have been proper, ingress of water into the panel, either under environmental conditions that the panel is likely to confront or under weather, as we proposed, had that been the case, then the entire evidence of the trial would have been whether the absent panels do allow ingress of water into the panel or not under those conditions. But that's not the way the case ended up playing out because of the construction.
But there are places in the spec where they're talking about waterproofing and they're talking about IP rating.
Yes, Your Honor, they're talking about levels of protection. So, for example, the spec gives examples. If you want to immerse the panel underwater 3 feet deep, then you've got to have a greater level of protection. And it gives an example of IP67. Always using the words, you know, for example, always using the words in one embodiment. We believe the portion of the specification that speaks directly to solid particles, water, and using the words environment is the best example in the specification for why water should not have been, for why waterproofing should not have been tied to the IP65 or higher rating.
Your time is getting low. Do you want to spend a little time on the display module question?
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. I think there it's really simply a matter of the specification and the disclosures and teachings of the specification. The specification does have, in the spec, express examples of one panel, one board, being attached to a frame and being illuminated. And the construction requires two boards. Boards are essentially boards, printed circuit boards that have LED lights on them. Two boards coupled together, operatively coupled together by this door-to-board configuration. And we believe that the express language of the specification it offers a different reading, and therefore it shouldn't be limited to the two-panel configuration. And I think if I could pull out the patent here for a second. On the appendix 258, which is the 791 patent at column 2, beginning at line 27, we have an example of, in one embodiment, the at least one LED board includes two LED boards disposed in a side-by-side arrangement. So that's one embodiment. We also have, in a first aspect, the present invention is a universal display module for a build-in-place billboard sign where the display module is mountable into any one of an array of structural bay members. I'm going to read the appropriate portion. At column 33, line 51, in this smallest configuration, which is achieved by using a skill saw to separate the smallest configuration from the balance of the frame, the resulting structural frame still has the ability to, within its associated structural bay member 16, a single display module. And there are other examples, we've cited them all in our brief, of sentences and lines where the specification refers to a single board or single panel and not the side-by-side configuration. We thought it was also important to point out in our brief that the phrase important or unique really dealt not with the two panels being joined to the daughter board operatively, but to the structure, the way the structure is in the center. And that language is pretty clear from the specification. So we believe on that it's really a question of limiting the claim to examples, and not the only example in this case, and coming up with a claim construction that has limitations that should not have been imported from the specification.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Kevin Martin for the Appellees. With me today, I'm joined by my colleague, Jordan Bach. Your Honor spent most of the questioning during my friend's opening argument focused on the waterproofing issue, and so I'll start there as well. Your Honors, there was ample evidence in the specification, as well as the trial record, for the district court's conclusion that a person of skill in the art would understand waterproofing in terms of IP ratings and would understand waterproofing in the context of these patents.
Can you start on that question where your friend started? And obviously, he acknowledged what Judge Toronto said, which is that the district court was free to do what, step in and include IP ratings. But it makes it us a little suspicious, right? Or it raises some question in our mind where not your claim, your proposed claim construction didn't reference IP ratings either in any way, shape, or form. Right.
That's right, Your Honor. We did not.
And so what do we do with that? Or doesn't that point at least start to point in a different direction?
And I think the question for purposes of an appeal is whether the district court's construction, while not proposed by one of the parties, is nonetheless supported by the record.
Yeah, but you thought your construction was supported by the record, and yours was the preferable and the correct construction, right?
We did, Your Honor, and that's also the construction we proposed in the IPR, for example. We weren't proposing different constructions in different places. While we did not propose the construction that the district court adopted, nonetheless, we think it is supportable by the record. And this also gets us to the prejudice point, which is at the end of the day, the construction that we proposed, we think would have been the same or more difficult to reach than IP65 or higher, or about the same. And if you look at the evidence that came in at trial, it's actually difficult to see how the construction they proposed.
Is this the point, and I'm afraid I don't, I'm not sure I'm remembering exactly. I thought that the district court's sentence on the prejudice question said something about how the jury could have found in your favor under your construction, so it wasn't prejudicial. But he didn't say... it is clear that the jury would have had to have so found.
I'm not sure of the precise wording on that, Your Honor.
Well, to my mind, those are actually critically different because could have is not enough for no prejudice, whereas definitely would have because it would have been unreasonable to find otherwise probably is enough for prejudice. I thought he used the softer form.
I agree those are different. The district court's focus on prejudice with respect to infringement was on this cabinet issue.
On the cabinet.
Which we can get to. Sticking though with the claim construction issue, you know, when you look at the testimony that came in at trial, when you look at the specification.
Right, but now you're no longer defending the claim construction.
No, I am defending the claim construction, Your Honor. So when you look at the specification repeatedly refers to weatherproof as being IP67 or higher. When you look at the testimony that came into trial from the inventor himself, he kept referring to weatherproof as IP65 or higher. And so to the extent that the jury was instructed that IP65 is what these patents cover, there was no evidence at trial that these patents cover anything less than IP65. So for purposes of infringement, nothing in the specification, no evidence at trial that these cover anything less than IP65. So for purposes of infringement, if the jury found these are not IP65, then they would have had to have found no infringement even under the weatherproof standard because, again, there was no evidence.
And you've now three times used the word weatherproof instead of waterproof.
Weatherproof.
Those are not the same, are they?
No, we don't think they are, but that was their construction. Their construction was essentially weatherproof. So at trial, the inventor, Mr. Hall, repeatedly referred to protection against the weather as IP65 or higher. Just to give a couple of examples, he said, this is at Appendix 10195, my whole goal was to develop a modular LED panel that could be completely sealed, that could be IP65 rated so it could stay out in the weather. As another example, when it rained, there was still an ability for water to get into the panel, so it still wasn't IP65 rated. That's the inventor's testimony at trial. If you look at the specification, it talks about weather in terms of IP67, so something...
I'm quite confused now. So the claim word that we're talking about is waterproof.
Is waterproof.
Right, which I think everybody agrees is different from weatherproof because there's... more bad stuff in the weather than water?
And there's also stuff that happens indoors. And these patents are not limited to outdoor use. If you look at
Right, but I guess this is getting, I want to focus a little bit on what Mr. Fabricant is focusing on, which is this aspect of these two-digit IP numbers in which only the second has to do with water.
And you asked a question, would this case, would it matter if the district court had simply said a second digit of five or higher? I think our position is that it really wouldn't have mattered because we really were focused on water at the trial. We weren't focused on...
I can't begin to know the entirety of the focus of the trial, but if it's right to describe the argument that you presented at trial as our IP is 54, and you didn't say it was 64, but with 54, then it's possible for the jury to be hearing, well, this differs from the IP minimum of 65, where actually it's two minima because it's not like everything above 65 is exactly right, that you flunked on both halves of that. It's not just below 65 because it's 64 or lower, it's actually 10 or 11 below 65, namely the first digit. So it's not clear to me, I guess, and that's really all I know about what the trial was about. You presented a IP figure for the accused product that differed in both digits.
It did differ in both digits. I mean, I will note in the specification, as well as in the expert's testimony, they consistently talk about waterproofing with reference to both digits. And when they're talking about water, they never simply say that the second digit. They always say 65, 54, 67.
Well, not exactly. Maybe frequently, but there are, column four on the 782 panel. It starts in certain embodiments. The display is 67 rated and therefore waterproof and corrosion resistant. So where you're right, I mean, they talk about either weatherproofing or waterproofing in most places in the spec when they use the IP rating. Not always, right?
No, they're all, that's correct, Your Honor. But what I will say, though, is when they talk about the degree of protection from water, they use both digits. The experts tended not, and the witnesses tended not to simply talk about what the second digit was. They tended to use both digits.
Was there any testimony differentiating, explaining to the jury what one digit is vis-a-vis the other digit, and the notion that the both digits cover something beyond waterproofing?
I don't have it in mind, Your Honor. I would assume that there was from one of the experts, but I don't have it in mind right now.
And do both digits in the industry standard IP, run from 0 to 9?
I know the second digit goes to 9. We have the table at Appendix 22126. I don't recall how high the
126,
Your Honor. I'm not sure how high the first digit goes. Actually, 22139 is the pin site for it within the ratings guide.
As far as harmless error or whatever we want to call it, with respect to infringement, I guess the argument, and you're right, the district court relied on the cabinet stuff on that. With respect to the invalidity contention, though, you have to step to the inventorship issue, right?
Well, what the district court found was that the evidence was that if they were correct that the construction of waterproof should mean keeping water out in adverse weather, then there was evidence that the prior art introduced at trial, UltraVision's own prior art UltraPanel, was, when it was built to its design specifications, proof against adverse weather. And so the district court's principal argument there was that even if he had adopted their construction, then the jury would have had to find.
But we don't know what the jury rested on, right? Isn't the law that in these kinds of circumstances you need a do-over because we don't know what the jury did?
It depends upon what the evidence is, Your Honor. And so this is an abuse of discretion standard for the district court. And the district court found that the jury would have found that these were, I think it was, well, would or could. I don't have the exact language in mind, Your Honor. But that there was evidence from which the jury either would or could have found that the prior art UltraPanel was proof against the weather. We also think, and we moved under Rule 50A for a directed verdict of invalidity on the basis of improper inventorship. We think the evidence was indisputable that Mr. Hall simply wholesale copied documents from the Chinese companies with whom he was working, that he amended his patent claims after being told design modifications by the Chinese companies with whom he was working. He actually introduced plastic after fighting against plastic in conversations with his manufacturers and partners over in China. And so we think the jury would have been required to find improper inventorship on these facts.
You just talked about the third issue, having talked about mostly the first issue. But what about the second issue? Display or something?
Oh, the cabinet, Your Honor, is that?
No, display module?
Display module, two panels and one board, or the daughter board, or whatever it is.
Right, and so there we think that their argument principally is based upon a misapprehension of this court's specification disclaimer precedent. There is no requirement for specification disclaimer that there be disparagement of the prior art. You don't have to meet the lexicography standard. It is sufficient to describe a particular aspect of the present invention as being important and unique and a distinguishing factor over the prior art. That is exactly what they did with respect to the daughter board and two display panel configuration.
Can you just help me understand? Because I don't think I fully understand. I thought the other side makes an argument that there are aspects of the specification that I think maybe they describe as a single board embodiment.
They point to one sentence in the, for the first time after the claim construction had already been issued. So for the first time in their appeal to the district court judge from the magistrate's claim construction, they point to one sentence which says that in one embodiment of one aspect, in a patent which has about two dozen aspects, each of which has numerous embodiments, that refers to at least one board. Now, there's nowhere in the specification does it explain how that at least one board relates to a daughter board plus two panels.
Do you remember the column and line number for that?
Column 2, right?
Yes, it's the very first
9-25 column 2.
It's the very first aspect of the invention says at least one board. Again, no does not after that point go on to address that ever again. In the very next embodiment is at least two boards. Now there was a discussion during Mr. Fabricant's argument about at least one module. The module of the present invention is described in the specification as the daughter board plus two panels. So at least one module does not support their argument at all. Now when the patent specification...
Let's focus though on column two though.
That essentially...
You're essentially asking us to look away from column two. From, you know, the first column of a rather lengthy summary of the invention section in order to affirm the district court construction here. And I'm just wondering, how can we do that?
So we're not asking you to look away from it, Your Honor. I think first they've waived this argument by not raising it at an appropriate time during claim construction. Second, they've not explained how that at least one board relates to the display module of the present invention as described throughout the rest of the specification.
Well, I mean, it says it right here in column two. In a first aspect, the present invention is a universal display module. And then goes further down, the display module comprising a whole bunch of things, and then at line 23, and at least one LED board coupled to the front side of the frame. I mean, why isn't that clear enough? What's so confusing about that?
Because there's no explanation of how that at least one board relates to a daughter board plus two panels.
Well, that's giving in to your conclusion that it must have two LED boards as well as a daughter board.
Well, two LED, sorry, Your Honor.
Panels. But I'm trying to understand what is the spec trying to communicate right here when it says at least one LED board?
Right, and we don't think that is communicating that you would have at least one panel without a daughter board. It's not clear from that how it relates to, and I would note as well.
But what is the ambiguity about at least one LED board? What else could it be referring to other than what the plaintiff is saying it refers to?
I mean, it could be a reference to, for example, the daughter board with the two modules. It's simply not clear. An important point here, too, is
Wait, before you start fast talking away, are you saying that when it says one LED board here in column 2, that could be referring to the entire display module 14, as that term is used at column 34?
It could be referring to the display board plus the panels.
Because, obviously what we have here in column 2 is the display module comprising a whole bunch of things plus one LED board. So, I mean, it seems like the most consistent reading would be that at least one LED board is referring to one of these two display panel assemblies that's being described at column 34. And so let's assume that's what's the right reading of this at least one LED board at column 2.
Yeah,
so then what do we do with that situation?
So we have 3 points, Your Honor. The first is the waiver point.
Let's put aside all your procedural things. Yeah,
let's try to figure out
what's the best understanding of this specification.
The second
view of what is disclosed in column 34 and what is being told to us in column 2.
And the second is that under this court's precedents like pacing technologies, not every embodiment disclosed in the specification needs to be read into every claim. And so here, we think that where the rest of the specification describes the display module of the present invention as comprising a daughter board plus two display panels, describes that as an important and unique aspect of the invention, explains why it's an important and unique aspect of the invention, what benefits it provides over the prior art, that you should not read, even if you view that as a separate, that we've been focusing on as a separate embodiment of the invention, that you don't have to read that into every claim, and in fact, you should not. You should focus on the specification as a whole, and what the specification describes, again, is the important and unique aspects of this module, and require those to be in the claims, not this very cursory reference found in that one sentence.
Is it part of your argument that the claim construction that says a pair of panels linked to a daughter board is not contradicted by the idea that there might be one LED board? That there's a difference between the panels and the boards?
In the context of the specification's description of what the display module of the present invention is, where it talks about the board and the panels, we think there's just not a contradiction there. That very cursory sentence at the beginning of the specification referring to one board, it's not clear that that's carving out just a daughter board or a panel or precisely what that means. The specification as a whole is focused very much on its more fulsome description of the display module, which is what the district court relied upon.
Was that your third point? You were going to give us 3 points. I think we've covered it.
There was waiver, pacing technologies, and honestly, I think I forget my third point at this point.
No. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, so we've gone a little over. We were going to restore your rebuttal time anyway. Why don't we give you 4 minutes for rebuttal to keep the time even?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that this falls within the Network One case with respect to the fact that there was prejudice. There's no question that Abson relied on the claim construction in presenting its defense in this case and that the evidence was all directed towards the use of the claim construction. There's also no dispute here that Judge Gilstrap never granted a Rule 50A judgment, despite the fact that there was argument. He didn't grant it on non-infringement, and he didn't grant it on invalidity, and he didn't grant it on inventorship or anything else which was argued to him before the jury was deliberating, or when the jury first went into deliberation. So I think this is a case where we fall within prejudice. And I just did want to comment on the cabinet issue for the moment so the court has an understanding what that was about. There was substantial evidence in the record at trial other than the expert issue on the cabinet, but I'll speak to the expert issue.
Okay, I guess I defer to my colleagues too, but this was not an issue that was brought up in any way, shape, or form of substance in the initial argument. So I'm a little...
That's fine. Well, I'm just responding to the cabinet issue.
Okay, fine.
And I just wanted to say we believe that substantial evidence in the record to support the fact that this was a modular display panel. And in fact, Judge Gilstrap did allow the expert to say it was a modular display panel, that there were two panels in the courtroom. Photographs were shown to the jury. The evidence was received. The objection came after that on a different question. And the judge never struck the testimony or instructed the jury to ignore any testimony. And he says something in his decision on denial of the motion for a new trial, which is where I know he says he excluded the expert's opinion, but there was opinion that was permitted that wasn't the subject of the objection and that wasn't stricken during the trial. I did want to comment with respect to the Cox patent, the daughter board issue. There is in column two, firstly, in one embodiment and at least one LED board includes two LED boards, followed by at line 30 of column two, in another embodiment, the display module further comprises a driver board mounted to the backside of the display frame and electrically coupled to the module connector and to the at least one LED board. So I think there are several places, even in column two and elsewhere, where one single LED board is referred to. My comment here is that if it's ambiguous, if it's not completely clear, we think it is clear based on the specification. But
is it right you didn't bring up column two to the district court? You know, the district court didn't have the benefit of this briefing about column two. Is that right?
That may be correct. I'm not in a position to say that that's incorrect. I would say, however, that it's kind of struck me as ironic that we had colleague arguing waiver when this IP69 issue was not brought up to the court during Markman proceeding. There was no reference to IP69. There was no IP69 chart. There was no reference to anything other than 67, 65, 67, and 8. Never mentioned. Nothing in the record. Never argued. And the first time that ever came up was in opposition to the motion for a new trial. So I just found it interesting that the waiver issue was being raised when their key argument on claim differentiation is based on an IP69 not being in claim 6, when that was never brought up during Markman.
Just on the first point, my recollection, I may have this wrong, was that Red obviously raised the waiver issue, and I don't think you responded to it that or disagreed with them in gray in terms of their characterization of it not.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank both sides, and the case is submitted.